evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. I'm Karen Tate, and tonight's musical offering opening the show was a lovely snippet from a song called Flora, Goddess of Flowers, actually written by our guest interview tonight, Den Poitras, the most radical male feminist alive. That's what he calls himself. And he's going to discuss with us his brush with a woman who came into his life who he believes experienced parthenogenesis in contemporary times. Very, very interesting stuff. If you've been a listener a while, you might remember another of our guests, Marguerite Rigoglioso, who discussed parthenogenesis in ancient times. Parthenogenesis being a woman's ability to conceive without the aid of human male sperm. Yeah. That might sound really out there, but once you look at what's going on in science today, if you've ever heard or read the work of Marguerite, then you begin to open your mind a bit. And tonight's guest, Den, and the woman he's going to discuss were referenced in my interview with Marguerite, though Den is going to give us a lot more information than Marguerite did about how this woman lived and how we think she conceived, the whole story. But I recommend you go back in the archives and listen to the shows with Marguerite, too, so you can have a fuller picture of how parthenogenesis might have worked in ancient times. It really makes one think, not just about the mysteries of our human or female potential that's going untapped, but it also brings into question if select women could conceive without men back then. Was that threatening enough to be incentive to obliterate goddess women's power and have something to do with the advent of patriarchy? I don't know. I'm leaving an open mind. I can only tell you that, you know, Marguerite leaves me scratching my head, and she's one of my favorite guests, and I am totally, totally intrigued by the subject. Because remember the mottos of the show, my dear and beloved friends and listeners. The first is all truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it's violently opposed. And third, it's accepted for being self-evident. That's from the 19th century German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer. And the second motto of our show, attributed to Gandhi, goes like this. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, but then you win. But before we get to my guest, Den, who is my only guest tonight, I have a promise to keep in my What's the Buzz segment. So here we go. As I promised, in honor of Keith Olbermann of Countdown fame on MSNBC, who we know will be back on the air on June 20th as the news director on Al Gore's cable television channel called Current TV, I will ask the question he would have asked every night. Mr. Boehner, where are those jobs? We thought you and your party were so concerned, or so you told the voters to get elected. But you've really pulled the biggest con, the biggest bait and switch, haven't you, Mr. Boehner? You and what people I know have come to call the Rethuglicans. All you seem to be working on is redefining rape, trying to take the rights of women to their bodies away from them. All the grand old plutocracy is doing is using the deficit crisis to thwart democracy as your radical Republican governors dissolve towns, neutralize the power of elected officials, and cancel contracts and collective bargaining. But we see you. You aren't able to hide what your party is about or who it serves. We know you want to privatize Medicare and food stamps, making more parasitic CEOs. But where is your moral justification? Maybe it's because of your heroine, Ayn Rand, who believes the only people of value are those at the top and the rest are the real parasites in your eyes. You must be very certain, Mr. Boehner, you're rich enough and your cronies are rich enough that you'll never, never, never need the social safety net. But what about women? 70% already retire in poverty. millions of kids already go to bed hungry, and you want to cut more from them while you give your corporate welfare queens even more? What would Jesus say about this Rand-inspired selfishness, Mr. Boehner? Maybe you and the Republican governor should just pass a law now and get it over with. You can call it Republicans for Soylent Green. We know who have their hands around our throats, Mr. Boehner, and it's not the Democrats. More and more people out there see you as the economic terrorists threatening our lives. Okay, well, for tonight, that will have to be my What's the Buzz segment, talking about the bees buzzing around in my bonnet. But a few new developments. First, I want to give thanks to Penny out there. Penny was just wonderful. She made arrangements so that Voices of the Sacred Feminine episodes are now available for download on iTunes. And I hope you know how to do that, but I'm going to be sending around an email. If you're one of my listeners, you'll probably get notice of it, how you do that. If you have iTunes on your computer, I think all you do is this, according to Penny, because I'm pretty technically challenged. She says you just open the iTunes store, you go to the podcast homepage. There's a tab up at the top. Once on the podcast homepage, look to the right-hand side and see the words podcast quick links. She says you click on submit podcast, then you put in the URL for the show, but instead of .com or something like that after the URL for the Voices of the Sacred Feminine show, you just put .rss. Okay, so the URL for Voices of the Sacred Feminine, .rss. So thank you, Penny. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you doing that for me and for all the other listeners. And I would like to invite listeners, if you're in Wisconsin next month, I will be at a retreat sponsored by Gaia's Womb called The Sacred Feminine, Changing the Paradigm. I'll be there all weekend, but my formal presentation is Saturday when I'll be presenting my workshop called Living the Sacred Feminine Lifestyle from Patriarchy to Partnership. And I should clarify, this is the first weekend in June. This is the 13th year that Gaia's Womb has put on this retreat for women, and I invite you to come out there and take part in the whole weekend. Gaia's Womb calls forth the women tribe to gather at the Gateway to Summer for a very special weekend retreat, and the other presenter besides myself is going to be Judica Isles, and this is a description of the theme, the sacred feminine, changing the paradigm. This is sort of our focus. All of the major world religions deprecate women to some degree. Former President Jimmy Carter has articulated this well as he says, quote, "It is the religions of the world which lead the way and provide cover for the abuse of women," unquote. Carter calls mistreatment of women the most serious and all-pervasive and damaging human rights abuses on earth. But now in 2011, quietly, steadily, there comes a shift where the old paradigm has very much been one of the destructive masculine, as evidenced by the devastation of the environment, the wars, the dictatorial governments that dominate our planet. The new paradigm brings into consciousness that this destructiveness is a manifestation of the masculine when it is disconnected from the feminine, taking the form of reckless, ungrounded action, and it's only through the awareness and acknowledgement of this that a new paradigm is able to emerge. So that's sort of the theme for the weekend. So if the first weekend in June you're in Wisconsin and would like to know more about the location or to join us, please email me at KarenTate.com. And please remember, or maybe it's the first time you've heard, that Blog Talk no longer is free to hosts like myself. The last year has been great because Blog Talk provided us this platform that we could share our guests' information with our listeners free of charge. Well, now it's going to cost us a minimum of about $40 each a month, and it's not a lot yet, but we're looking for a sponsor or even a few people who might commit to helping us pay for the show to keep it on the air. So, you know, goddess teaches us what you tend to, what you nurture, what you nourish, well, it thrives, and what you neglect withers. So thanks to those of you who have already sent in some donations. And if you'd like to make a contribution, please go to the Goddess Store page on my website at KarenTate.com. And there are PayPal buttons there. You can make a donation of any amount you can afford. And while you're looking at your computer screen, my show page, there are three F's there that that I'd like you to sort of you know, look for. The first is the follow button. Click that, and you'll never miss notice of any of my new guests each week. Also, I'd love it if you would become our friend. There's a button there to become our friend, and also to mark Voices of the Sacred Feminine a favorite. So that's follow, friend, and favorite. So thank you very much. And we are still signing people up to join our tour to Turkey in November for men and women. We're going to be visiting sacred sites of Goddess on a probably a 2,000-mile tour. And we're going to do lots of wonderful ritual things as well as, you know, learn about Goddess from a left and right brain perspective. And we're only taking 20 people. There has been a good response to the trip. I'm sure it's going to fill long before November, so if you're thinking about it, make sure you contact me and let me know of the status of things for you, okay? But let's turn our attention to tonight's show. Many of you have told me how much you enjoy when I start the show with this particular opening. You say it makes you feel empowered. So occasionally I repeat it, and I think tonight, considering our topic, it's appropriate to repeat it. So here goes. As many of you know, adversaries of the sacred feminine tried to sweep away awareness and knowledge of her for all time. And with that sweeping away, when the great she was made to disappear because of the religion of patriarchy, of selfish and disconnected men and their war gods, well, women and their power, their leadership, their spiritual authority were thwarted, repressed, became taboo, diminished, and disrespected. That's why here on the show I am dedicated to recovering the great she, whether she be a deity, archetype, or an ideal. Yes, here we intend every week to defy, to taste the forbidden fruit, to be powerful and uppity women and men, to throw off the shackles, look under every rock, behind every locked door, peer into the abyss of the past, so we know why things are the way they are, how they have come to be so turned on their head and unnatural. And we're going to go about setting things right. Why? Because if we want to save ourselves as a species, I think we have no other choice. If we want to restore balance, harmony, wholeness, sanity, it is women with our like-minded brothers armed with ideas of the sacred feminine who will set things back on course. So let us delay no further because we have a lot to get to tonight. Dan Poitras is our guest, the most radical feminist guy, and I want to read his bio and then invite him to start chatting with me and with us. In 1969, Dan had the opportunity to live and work at the Hippocrates Health Institute in Boston. Here he experienced rejuvenation through a living food diet consisting of a variety of sprouts, sunflower greens, buckwheat greens, organic fruits, nuts, vegetables. But what accelerated the process of cleansing and regeneration was the chlorophyll-rich juice of wheatgrass, whose research and development came about through the pioneering efforts of Dr. Ann Widmore. Dan had access to the personal library of Victoris Kolvinskas, co-founder of Hippocrates Health Institute and author of Survival in the 21st Century. Within Victor's many volumes, Dan began to find out about longevity, fasting, breatharians, celibacy, ancient matriarchal cultures, and women's mysteries, especially parthenogenesis, which is the primary topic tonight. den head, for better or worse, opened Pandora's box, and from that moment on, his life would never be the same. Now, over 40 years have passed, and the information about it all, parthenogenesis in particular, has grown through research, experiences, and contemplation. As the world enters what the Hopi Indians call the return of the feminine, Den feels it's time for him to share what he discovered with those who might listen. So, Den, I am grateful for you being on the show tonight.
Thank you, Karen. I just got a chill. I really want to say that I really, really, I highly regard your take-no-prisoners attitude about everything that you say, and it's so inspiring, and it sounds funny coming from a man, but I feel men's freedom really, truly lies in women's freedom, and there's no way that we're going to be liberated without women, you know, doing that first.
Well, now it's my turn, Ben, to tell you you
yeah.
gave me a chill because, you know what, I'm so glad to have men like you on the show because, you know, there are women out there who never get a chance to meet men like you
right.
or like my husband or so many men out there who are fighting the fight alongside us, you know.
Right.
And I am, you know, I so appreciate you coming on the show to talk about this because let's face it, you know, as I told you before the show started, you know, I had some weird emails from people saying, oh, come on, really?
Right.
You know, but I don't know. I feel like, you know, we only use a small percentage of our brain.
Yeah.
Couple that with the fact that we are so disconnected from our bodies,
oh,
from nature.
I know.
From
nature.
Who knows what we might possibly have once been able to do.
No.
That, you know, that's just been lost
yeah.
to us, you know?
It is truly ancient knowledge, and it's not just that the Greeks had it down. There's all kinds of tribal, indigenous peoples that they recognized. There were two forms of birth. One was what they called the old way, and the other one was the normal way, which is, you know, men and women. But they all had ceremonies set aside and different methods for creating a child in the old way. And the whole purpose is to bring love and wisdom and gifts from these beings born through conceptions like this. And it's a relatively rare phenomenon, even when people willingly try to do it. Like Marguerite points out, it's even under the best circumstances, it's still relatively rare. But it does happen, it has always happened, and it's going to happen again and again, and there's no changing it. Once we open the box, the Pandora's box, there's no going back. One information leads to more questions, and then there's more information, and it just goes on and on and on. But
right. Well, and we're going to get a bit into science, but
yeah.
And if people go back and listen to some of the things Marguerite and I talked about,
mm.
I mean, science is showing us that this is not an impossibility.
No,
it is a possibility. There are species out there that reproduce today parthenogenically.
Yes.
And let me say, before we get into this, if I ask you anything that you can't answer, or if I get too close to, you know, revealing the woman or anything like that,
right.
you know, just say, you know what, I can't go there, and that's perfectly
oh,
okay.
Sure. Sure.
Now, can we use her first name
yeah.
when we talk about her?
Yeah, Lori.
Lori. Okay,
right.
So Lori was the woman.
Right.
So, Den, what makes the most sense to you? Do you want to start with the Hippocrates Health Institute? Because diet and how Lori lived,
right.
You know, had a lot to do with, I think, why you believe she was able to do this, right?
Yeah, right. She started, now, all you people out there, don't try this at home.
Okay.
But she actually did go to Hippocrates about a year after I had been there in 1969, and she stayed for about a week, and then she left. So she had a lot of knowledge of how to do it, you know, to change her diet radically. She began experimenting with vegetarianism and fruitarianism when she was 16, and it just accelerated from there, and then she got into macrobiotics, and then she got information about fasting, and so she would try a day without fasting, I mean without food, you know, and then she after, I think she was about 18, is when, 18, 19, I think she was 19 when she decided, she kept trying to go, she would go a week without solid food. And already people go, oh, that's impossible, but it's not impossible. And anyway, don't try it at home. You have to have a lot of background and information. You have to have a lot of preparation before you attempt a fast, because you can, your body gets flooded with a lot of toxins. And
yeah, and you can get really sick. I mean, I know that from just doing a fast for 24 or 48 hours.
Right. So she always experienced very positive results from her fasting. So she decided to go on this 40-day fast when she was 19. And she went, she did it. And she would drink distilled water, or she would take grapes and put them in a blender and then strain them and just drink the juice. So that's how she did it. And she would climb mountains and work part-time in a restaurant.
So she was a waitress? I mean, so she was on her feet all day?
Exactly.
Yeah, physically demanding.
Unbelievable. So she decided...
Now, Dan, I have to ask you, was parthenogenesis her aim, or was that just an unexpected side effect?
We discussed it. We used to speak together. She was like a wonderful sister. I was very close to my two sisters, and I still am. I have a lot of strong women in my family. My mother just died 2 years ago. She was 95. She stayed on her own until the very last couple of weeks, and you know, then she died. And it was right around the time that I met Marguerite Bergoglio. I met her about a week before my mother died, and I was able to tell my mother that I was meeting up. I was going to be meeting up with Marguerite, and I showed her Marguerite's book, and I told my mother, she was, you know, raised a Catholic like me, and I told her that, you know, that Marguerite had studied the priestesses in early Greece, and that they would conceive and give birth in that way, pretty much like Jesus appeared. And she looked at me and she said, oh my God, this is just my father, my grandfather, you know. Because I was very artistic, and I always asked deep questions when I was a little boy. And she said, Grandpa, my father said that I was going to do something very special, that something that was going to be involved in it. And she said, that's what it is. And she died a week later.
Wow.
But I was able to tell her all about my friend Lori, and because Lori did come to visit, you know, after a year and a half of not eating. Or was it 2 years by then? But she went 2.5 years without solid food. And you can call it's called breatharianism. Breatharians. You could look it up. You could Google breatharian. There's more than one people, you know. There's a handful of people right now on the planet that go long, long periods without solid food. Now, it doesn't mean it's a requirement for parthenogenesis. It has nothing relatively to do with it at all. But this woman, Lori, just kept, she extended her 40-day fast. And I met her through a friend of a friend who said, oh, you got to meet this friend of mine that I told her about you, and that you went to Hippocrates, and she went to Hippocrates, and that she would love to ask you a bunch of questions, because Lori was wondering if she should break her fast after a year of no solid food. And so I met her, and it was just incredible. She had a copy of the book, Survival into the 21st Century, by Viktoras Kalvinskas. He's the co-founder of Hippocrates Health Institute. Anyway, I was geared to all the information about breatharians and diet, and so I didn't encourage her or discourage her. I just gave her all information that I knew, and she decided to extend her fast. So that was
Well, Jen, let me interrupt you here for a
right.
second, because I want to make sure I'm understanding, and, you know, I try to always ask the questions that maybe my are popping up in my listeners' head.
Right.
I know from, you know, from doing goddess rituals and from, you know, trying to learn to do trance work, that some of the things they recommend you do is to eat light. You know, some people, you know, do ritual baths, some will fast, because they believe that that helps them go into trance. It maybe helps them connect with the other side. So do you, because a minute ago I think you said you're not sure the diet was required for this, but somehow
I had the fast.
So you think the two are unrelated or no?
From what I've seen, fasting is recommended before an attempt of parthenogenesis. You know, Parthenon means of virgin origin. And, of course, genesis means to generate. So it does mean, like, virgin generation. That's what the word means. And, you know, this is 42 years I've been, you know, I stumbled on the subject, but it kind of found me in a lot of ways because I lit up like a light bulb. You know, I was raised Catholic, and I always, even though there was jokes about the Virgin Mary, I just couldn't dump the idea that there was something sacred about Mary and Jesus and the whole thing. And then I found a whole lot of literature about the Essenes and how Jesus was a product of the Essenes, and he was virgin born. You know, and that was very threatening to King Herod's patriarchal empire.
Right, and again, listeners, go back and listen to the interviews with Marguerite. That's vital.
Oh,
you know,
it's vital.
So you get this backstory.
Oh, yes. I mean,
okay,
everything.
Go ahead, Dan.
Once you get to me, it's not just me. I really know that the parthenogenesis is the jewel in the crown of creation. It is the factor that is going to, that is being unveiled. It is the time of the unveiling. Where the planet is in a new moon phase. 2012, the tide turns, and parthenogenesis is the root of the tree, the goddess of life, and that's what's waiting to come to the surface. And once it does, nothing can stand against it. Marguerite talked about nobody can defeat her book. No scholar can stand against it, she said. And I felt that way about parthenogenesis about 30 years ago. The more I found out about it, I realized this is not going to go away. More stories came my way. I lived in Santa Fe for 9 years in the 1980s, and a good friend of mine, she told me, "Dennis, you're an angry woman trapped in a man's body," because she would hear me rant and rave, you know. And you know, I read all the books I could on, you know, Mary Daly wrote, you know, and it's like, boy, you know, but being a man, you get really scorched reading Mary Daly. But I really loved her work.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about take no prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
And she just died a few years ago.
I think within the last year.
So this goes on. I mean, there's so much to cover. It's ridiculous. I can talk.
Let's sort of do this logically. I'm the Virgo.
Yes.
I can't help that. Let's sort of talk about some of the science of it, okay?
Yes.
Because we can talk about what we think intuitively and anecdotally, but let's sort of talk a little bit about the science because you know, you alluded to medical mysteries, especially of women.
You
said, besides fodder for comedians, what's the purpose of the hymen? Why do women menstruate? You know,
women are the only mammals, except for one species of whale, that has hymen. And no doctor, you can scour the internet, can explain why women have a hymen. And I really, truly understand that it's nature saying that she has a preference, and that's...
Oh, so in other words, she can either penetrated by a human male or not. Is that the idea?
Right. that
okay.
Men are secondary, biologically. The first 3 months of human life, they say it's an asexual being. No, it's a girl. Let's look at it.
Mm-hmm.
When if it's going to be a boy, the ovaries descend and they become testicles and the clitoris elongates. You know, I'm just, as a man, I am just a version of the female. That's all that I am. I have a big clitoris, big deal. Does that give me the right to rule over anything? No. It makes me more vulnerable, if anything, especially with my testicles hanging unprotected. You know nature would never do that. You know, it's like, that's a vital organ hanging unprotected, so no wonder men have a giant ego. It's biologically based. They have no idea why they're so sensitive, but men are extremely sensitive, you know, with their egos. And that's okay, you know. It's good to know my weakness. It's all right, you know. I mean, you kick a football player there and it's over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it just goes on from there.
Well, you said, why do the menstruation? What was
yes,
your take on that?
That's, I believe that is one of the requirements. Now, a lot of women athletes, the ones that have a relatively natural diet, or, you know, just a really good diet, you know, not a lot of meat, not a lot of drinking, no smoking, that kind of thing. They will lose their menstruation. It's like the body calls upon all those resources because they're working out every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of women athletes right now don't menstruate, and I believe that's one of the requirements. All the vitamins and hormones and blood loss, that all gets recycled. And,
so you're saying you think that's a requirement of parthenogenesis?
I believe
that the menstruation stops?
I believe it could be. That's
Is that what happened
factors.
With Lori?
What's that? Oh, yeah.
Is that what happened with Lori?
Oh, yeah. And when I'm living in Hippocrates, these young women would come there. And after about a month living there, their normal period, you know, which involved cramps and a lot of blood loss, even their first period after that diet would be like a thin, a pinkish, you know, instead of a heavy blood flow, just a light flow of a pinkish water, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And no cramps, nothing. And that's what happens. They did a study on anthropoid apes that were taken. Now, anthropoid apes very closely resemble human beings. And they've noticed, this was done years ago, that anthropoid apes in their natural environment with their natural food bleed twice a year, just like all the mammals on the planet, you know, spring and fall. And the rest of the time, they don't bleed every month, you know. And these apes brought into, like, a zoo and fed denatured food, you know, whatever, supplementary diet, they would bleed once a month. Now, when these anthropoid apes are returned to their natural habitat, they bleed twice a year. And now, it's not to say that menstruation is a curse. God, that it is wonderful. It's nature is working. So, you know, it's wonderful. If we all pretty much live in Rome, and our diets are not what they should be, we pretty much know that. So having a period is a blessing from nature. You know, just the body chooses channels of elimination, whatever they might be, to get rid of toxins.
Mm-hmm.
And excess, uric acid, which is one of the things that's created in, you know, from eating a lot of meat and, you know, drinking and all kinds of stuff, you know.
So so the menstruation is a form of toxic elimination.
Right.
And when you're on these restricted diets, the raw food, the juicing,
right,
all of that, there's nothing to, you know, there's no toxins,
right,
to get rid of.
So that energy, you get sublimated, and what I noticed right away, I was 19 when I started this diet, and every morning, you know, ever since I reached puberty, like most males, they, you know, their alive and well in that department, I should say. You know, the erectile tissue down there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most men wake up with that, and it's like, oh boy, you know, where's my girlfriend? You know,
mm-hmm.
And they just want to do that all the time. You know, and one of the things that happened on this diet is that I lost that, and I wasn't repressing anything. It's just celibacy became the natural result, and any kind of yogic teacher they know that. So that energy gets recycled, it gets sublimated. And so truly, when a woman walked in the room, she was my sister. I could feel
mm-hmm.
her on a soul level. So I got very close to some women that were just a few years older than me there, and we got to talk about menstruation, you know, of all things. And it was a lot of fun. But they, you know, I said, whoa, because they were asking me questions, you know, and I said, well, according to the literature here, this is what you can expect, you know, if you're a woman, is that it will diminish, if not disappear, and don't worry about it. It's okay. Unless you have symptoms or something, it's okay.
Right, right.
And,
So in a way, I think what you're saying is not only were, you know, these sorts of, I don't want to use the word abnormal. That's not what I'm looking for. But,
right.
These sorts of body changes
mm-hmm.
seem to go, run parallel with the parthenogenesis.
Right.
So it goes to show that, you know, in a sense, our bodies will act differently under
right.
different circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Because you even had something, you wanted to say something about lesbian miscarriages.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there was a good friend of mine that was a very staunch feminist in Santa Fe. This is a different friend than the one I told you about before. But she had a acupuncture practice, and she had all women. She would only work on women. She was very, very. She wasn't a lesbian woman, but we became really good friends because we used to talk feminism. You know, we had the same books, Mary Daly and everything. And she was so amazed that I had all these books and I was so into it, you know. And I'm not into it because I think it's cool or something. I'm into it because I genuinely get extremely excited about feminism. I really believe that women really, really need to just get out there and take control. Not like not like Sarah Palin's. We don't need those.
No, those are just handmaidens of the patriarchy.
I would elect you tomorrow. I'm just waiting for more women to be like you, you know.
You even wrote the quote. I didn't know about this quote before. You said Buckminster Fuller said,
yeah.
"Give men their gadgets and inventions,
right.
and let women run the world."
I just love that he said that before he died. He was a genius. He was in his 80s when he said that. That's one of his conclusions in life. You know, I love that. You know, men are tinkerers. They're troublemakers. They're sparky, you know. We provide the spark to get the old egg going. But you think of the egg, you know, the unfertilized egg. Imagine a basketball and imagine a mosquito. I don't know if that's the right proportion, but the mosquito was like the little dinky sperm. Only one of those guys wiggles in there, and then he dissolves.
Right.
And then
right.
if you see it with time-lapse photography, infrared, microscopic films, which I have seen, the moment that's called epigenesis. I've heard other terms used for epigenesis. It's when the sperm, you know, punctures the egg. But that little guy goes in there, wiggles around, he dissolves, and then you can see this this moment of conception. It's like this electrical light just implodes, like from another... to me, it's spirit entering matter, you know.
Right, right.
And
well,
you
Dan,
can
you
see
obviously
it.
Have been studying this for years. This is not something, some idea you just latched on impulsively.
No, and it comes, I mean, no matter where you look, you're going to find stuff related to this.
You were about to talk about the miscarriages.
Yeah, and my friend was working on a lesbian woman, and she was saying, you know, while she was getting worked on, she said, oh, I just got this newsletter from this lesbian friend of mine. And this couple has been together for 10 years. And it's been happening to them every couple of years or so. the woman gets pregnant, one of her partners, and then miscarries. She doesn't even know she's pregnant. She has these miscarriages, and so they put out this newsletter, this lesbian couple among the lesbian community, all of America, as many, communities as there were at that time, and trying to find information. So my friend said, oh, well, I've got this friend of mine that knows a lot about that stuff. So anyway, I was able to meet with her, and I told her as much as I could. And she said, well, that makes sense. So I said, yeah, that's...
So has there been, do you know if there has been a study? I mean, because obviously those two women you just mentioned, the lesbian couple,
right.
I wonder if this is more common than we know.
I suspect it is.
Well, I would love to hear from some of the listeners out there if they,
right.
Maybe know of couples who this is mm-hmm. something that maybe happens in their lives as well. Because I can certainly imagine that maybe this is not something that's been studied very much.
Right here is a good place to talk about what's called dermoid cysts.
Okay.
And the dermoid cysts, let me see if I have that right here. Looking up dermoid cysts, right, in the Chambers Medical Dictionary under mediological records, we find dermoid cystic growths. Now, I've had some dental work done, so my diction is a little off, so I wanted to put it off, but I had to get some work done, so I feel like I'm talking like a hick, but it's okay.
No, you sound fine.
Not too bad, but anyway, the dermoid cystic growths, the embryonic growths, or tumor-like formations found in women and sometimes men, which is really strange, which are of congenital origin, containing evidence of being dejecta membra or the remains of pregnant growths in the embryonic fetal period of gestation, somewhat akin to the primary state of being with the child. These so-called dermoid cysts, mistaken by surgeons for tumors, are really embryos, are similar in all respects similar in all respects to the products of female gestation containing bones, hair, teeth, flesh, glands, portions of the scalp, face, eyes, ribs, in short, all the organs of the human body. They are found in both sexes, although the males are very rare, and are really virgin embryos in the process of development. Many
wow.
would result.
What part of the body do they pop up
yeah.
in the
many,
womb?
Many
or
would
anywhere?
Result in living children if not taken out by surgeons. It is quite important to realize that dermoid cysts are usually found in young women whose hymens are still intact, virgin.
Wow.
I'll wrap up this crash course on dermoid cysts with a quote about hymens that I don't feel is altogether. But let me just finish this. This is not unrelated anyway. Here's a quote. The fact that a woman has a hymen interfering with coitus, sex, while animals have none, indicate that woman was intended by nature to reproduce in a different, non-painful manner. That's this man named Marshall. He's a physiologist. That was like 1930.
Wow.
It's pretty old stuff, a lot of the stuff that I have, a lot of the literature.
So, Dan, the dermoid cysts, were they in the womb area? Is that where?
Yeah, that was there was a study done in Lancet Journal of Medicine. I think that's what it's called, and that's based in the UK. And in the 1930s, they assembled because they were trying to, it was like a typical one would be like, all right, an 11-year-old girl has a swelling in her abdomen, And she has religious parents, and her hymen's intact, and she's hurting. So they take her to the doctors, and it's a dermoid cyst, so they operate and remove it. Now, the medical procedures analyze the cyst, and some of these cysts were reported that had, vertebrae, and they had, hair. So it was one of her eggs had self-fertilized without her knowing it, and it started to develop into... an embryo, a child, and it got stuck in her fallopian tube, so they remove it. And so it's like a medical mystery, you know,
right.
One of those medical mysteries. Well, if you're a man, of course, it's a medical mystery.
Right, right.
But,
so,
who, you know, it's unexplainable. They gathered about 300 cases, and about 30 of those had human thingies in them, you know. Anyway.
They had human what in them?
Human, traces of, you know, like hair and bone and tissue.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah, that there was
so,
actually a baby that was starting to develop.
So it's
okay.
Unconscious.
So Dan,
no,
before we
get... It started the rot away, you know, it didn't develop any further, so it had to be removed because it was getting, you know, toxic.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because it wasn't being fed, like with an umbilical cord or anything.
Right, no.
So Dan, any more, you know, sort of weird science we want to talk about before we start, you know, get into the actual story of Lori?
Yeah, we need about 9 hours.
we're going to hit the high points.
Yeah.
We
could do a very.
So what do you think is, you know, how did it start? What are the most important points for listeners to know about this?
Yeah. This is very real. You could put me in a blender. You could, you know, gun me down. You could, whatever. It's not going to change what I've said. This is really powerful stuff. It's real. You know, it's down to earth. It's blood and guts.
So
there's a whole spiritual aspect to it, you know, like Marguerite covers some of the ceremonial things that the Greeks were into. And,
well, who was Lori?
You know,
I mean, who was she spiritually?
She was a Taurus woman, 6 feet, 2 inches tall, and she was completing her year of going without solid food when we met, and then we became really good friends, and we would talk like 6 to 8 hours a day, about 3 days a week, and she never touched a crumb of food. And there's no way that she's like saying, oh, I'm better than you or I'm holier than thou. She always had her feet on the ground, and she paid her rent, and she went to work. And one time she slipped on the floor. There was some lettuce on the floor in the kitchen, and she slipped, and she twisted her knee and ruined some ligaments there. So I helped her through that, and we grew wheatgrass, and she had to take a diluted form of that because it was so strong. But... that helped her knee to heal, and then she went back to work here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But she kept hearing, she hardly ever slept. And there's something about fasting. I've gone up to 9 days, and I've done 6 days, and I've done 4 days. And after about 2 days, you lose so much, so many of your normal paranoias, you know, it just, you know, like fears of revealing, you know, too much emotionally or something. I don't know. It's different for everybody. But you become this vessel of peace and clarity. And you can't even imagine why you would lie make a lie up about anything. You know, you could ask, anybody could ask you a question about your life, and you would be so glad to tell them anything. So I understand what that's like. And after a year of not eating, you know, Lori was as transparent as, you know, as glass, you know. And so everything she told me, it was real. It was, you know, this, you know, so I know she didn't eat, and there was no problem. Everyone else knew she didn't eat, and so we went beyond that, you know, and we talked about all kinds of cosmic things about the universe and, you know, humanity and politics. But she kept hearing voices, and they're kind of... They were like woman voices, and she would hear them. She would sleep maybe 1 hour in the evening, and before dawn she would actually sleep. But before that, she would start meditating around 2 a.m., and she'd go into these just beautiful states of meditation, and there were voices talking to her. And part of it was that the voices were telling her that it was absolutely safe and very important that she confide everything that she was going through in me and to continue doing that. And
Why do you think that was?
Well,
just so that she had some support or what?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a very good listener, and I'm very compassionate and sympathetic, and plus I had already had a background with breatharians and fasting and menstruation. And
so, Dan, who do you think the voices were, and what else were they telling her?
Right. they were telling her things about the future, too. And
did any of the things come true?
I'm trying to remember. There were all these little things, but there were certain things that she said she couldn't tell me. But I had, right around that time, I had a little, my son, I had a 4.5-year-old son. I was 25 years old. He drowned in a river in California. And it's very difficult to talk about what one feels like, but it's as if somebody took an industrial vacuum cleaner and just put it in your head and just emptied you out. So you're like this husk. You're this shadow of your former self. And that's what happened to me at that time. But she stayed in touch with me.
So you were going through that while she was doing these meditations, hearing these voices.
And she assured me that my son was happy and he wasn't blaming me for his death. And that helped a lot, you know.
So who do you think the voices were, Dan? If you had to guess.
It's probably just her deeper self. Or
mm-hmm.
You know, we're part of, we are spirits. And, you know, having human experiences, we're not humans having spiritual experiences.
Yeah.
We came from a beautiful source and we're going to return there. And we're having human experiences now, you know, right now until we leave our bodies, you know. So anyway, this continued. And then one time she called me in 1976. On Christmas Eve, she wasn't even aware it was Christmas Eve. She was in a meditation, and she just came out of it. She said she called me up on the phone, and she said, Dennis, I just had this incredible experience with this light. It was this bliss. And she said, the voices told her that she had just conceived the child. She said, I don't know if I'm going out of my mind, but that's what they told me. 2 weeks later, she went to a clinic, and she got tested for being pregnant. She went through hell thinking about, God, am I going to question these voices? Am I really pregnant? Should I really do this? And she, you know, with a mixed feeling, she went to the clinic and she was verified that she was pregnant.
Yeah, because back then you couldn't go get the little stick that you pee on.
Right. Yeah, this was 1976.
Right, right.
And I said, okay, Lori, you know, just another thing that she's telling me, and I believe everything she said, because I know what it's like to fast. I know that she was honest. She had nothing to hide. She had no ambitions. She said, I don't know if this is real.
So
the doctor was
any,
so blown away by her.
You don't have any doubt in your mind that she was not with a man?
No doubt. No doubt.
Okay.
No doubt at all. She was definitely celibate, non-menstruating woman. And they were the prime targets, by the way, in the Dark Ages, the women that lived isolated in nature. They were non-bleeding midwives. Could you believe that? That's from some literature I read that was researched and put together in the 1950s.
The targets of who? The Inquisition?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I want to ask you about this light, and I want to make sure I take a minute here to remind listeners to go listen to those interviews with Marguerite, because Marguerite talks about the light. The light is a crucial part in this process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if Lori spoke to you in this much detail, so forgive me for being so blunt, but I have a curious nature. So she talked to you about the light. I mean, you know, I'm thinking Star Trek, okay? She stands there. Is the light coming down in through her crown chakra, or is the light coming up through her yoni? What happened? Did she tell you?
Well, one is completely basking in the light from all directions. You become one with, you know, it's a mysticism, really. The mystics talk about the light. It's brighter than the sun. It's more familiar than home. People that have near-death experiences talk about the light the same way. And it's all about love. It's all about love. This parthenogenesis is all about love, bringing in a child that is gifted, that is free of the DNA and the karma of its ancestors, and they remain like with the Buddha mind, the childlike mind, through their whole life, and they have gifts to bring to us, and so it's an incredibly difficult goal for women to achieve. Poor women, you know, so one more thing is going to be put on them.
This is not to create your average child. That's not the product of one of these.
Right. I mean, all children are sacred and wonderful and beautiful. You know, that's not the point. You know, but the indigenous people that's there in all the literature, the old stuff, they have ceremonies for to conceive in that way because they knew the value of having a child that way. That they would be great chiefs, great visionaries, healers, peacemakers. Just simple, beautiful, wonderful, peaceful people like Jesus and Buddha and supposedly, I mean, there's a lot of women too, but, you know, that are historically were born that way. So, I mean, who can really know? It's too buried. It's too gone. It's too unresearched. You know, it's not enough
to
go on.
Well, before we leave this little piece of the conversation, I want to, if you can remember, to elaborate. You said you read about during the time of the Inquisitions that those were the women who they were targeting. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, that's, well... That's about it. I mean, it's just something that came to me that tremendous research that was done. I think it's called, The Secret of Regeneration by Hilton Hotema. And it's in there, and it's, the English is it was written in the 1940s and the 50s. It's like everyone was talking through a megaphone at that time, you know, and so it's kind of, it's a little rough to get through, but there's some incredible information in this book, and it's an amazing book. Health Research, it's called.
Okay. So, all right. So it's Christmas, and she calls you.
Yes,
Lori
I
calls
know.
You.
I wasn't even aware of that.
And she says she thinks she's pregnant, so she goes to the clinic, and they confirm it.
Right.
All right. So what then?
She had another experience around Easter, of all things, and this is where the stigmata comes in. The center of our hands and feet is our solar plexus, our nerve.
So wait, she's 4 months pregnant, roughly by Easter, right?
And she had another experience with a blissful light, and it told her she was going to be that this child was a source of light attached to her uterus, and it would remain in this state, and then it was going to enter the 9-month cycle, so she would be pregnant for over a year. You know, like spiritually pregnant, which is, I can't fathom what that means. But she went into great detail in it in some of her letters to me.
Let me stop here for a second, because my first thought when you told me, okay, she got pregnant at Christmas, and then this thing happens, then she has some sort of other experience.
She bled from her hands and her feet, and she was not raised Christian. That's the mystery of the stigmata, is that the center of our hands and feet is our solar plexus. And she said, she only bled for about a minute. It wasn't lots of blood. But it came from the center of her hands and feet.
Interesting.
It was a purification.
The stigmata was.
Yeah. She did have the baby. She delivered it herself. The baby lived to be 4 months, and it died.
Okay,
and
we've gone to that. We've jumped to that way too quick.
Yeah.
I got questions before the baby
comes.
We're
getting so close to 10 o'clock, that's why.
we have time if you have time.
Oh, I do.
Oh, okay, all right. So we'll
talk
just. I want to make sure we finish this. All right. So you aren't making any implication that because she found out on Christmas, this has anything to do with Jesus or Christianity or anything.
She was raised. Her mother was a Hungarian Jew, and her father was an Englishman.
Okay. And, so the Easter and the Christmas. You're just using that as a time reference.
They were very secular parents, and she had no particular religion. She wasn't. Didn't have the indoctrination that I went through as a Catholic.
I want to know as much as we can know about this pregnancy. So she finds out she's pregnant in December. Does anything happen between December and Easter except stigmata?
Oh yes. The doctor that, I mean, they took blood tests. You know, when she was being verified for being pregnant. The doctor said, what in the world, you know, what do you do? What's your lifestyle? Because she said the male doctor said that your blood was as new and free flowing as like a baby's. He said, I've never seen in an adult blood as pure and as free flowing in an adult. He said, what in the world do you do? And she said, well, she didn't say she didn't eat food. She said,
yeah.
Well, I'm a vegetarian, you know. And
So she's got this strange body chemistry.
Right. And
now when she's pregnant, is she still not eating?
Right. Yeah,
sustain the baby just on distilled water.
Right. The voice has told her that when the baby enters the 9-month physical growth, that she would be told when that happens, and that's when she should start eating. So she went two and a half years. So she went a year and a half. She had already been fasting for a year. So she went a year and a half after that with no food, and then she started eating as the baby entered its 9-month cycle. She said her weight never changed. She was 135, which is not much, but she always looked good. She never looked gaunt.
Uh-huh.
She always had a nice glow, a nice round, puffy cheeks. 6 feet 2 inches tall, you get this woman.
Yeah, and that 135
and so sweet,
pounds, she was
so
really
sweet
thin.
And gentle. Just beautiful.
So, Dan, okay,
yeah.
So she's got the pure body, the pure body chemistry. She's got the stigmata. How long did the stigmata last?
Only a few minutes.
That happens once.
Yeah, she was
Were there any other unusual things during the pregnancy?
Yeah, like I was saying, this doctor found, he was blown away. He said, look, I have a colleague of mine that loves studying women in various states of health, and I really, really think that he would, I just know that he would, pay for your transportation there. It was like the next state over, from where out west where she was living, and put you up in a hotel, and just examine you, blah, blah, blah. And if you want to do that, blah, 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 we'll set it up. And so she called me and told me about it, and she was wondering, should I do this or no? Am I testing the light again? Am I questioning it? So she ended up doing it. She got verified again that she was pregnant. And the doctor was blown away testing her out, the same thing, finding out about her blood, and he wanted to keep her, for days, and she decided not to do that. And the story gets really crazy after that. It gets really, sci-fi.
Well, tell us. Can't dangle that carrot,
yeah.
Not tell us.
You can always, I'll tell everybody the story that I have online. It's the story of Lori. And I'll give you the website for it.
Okay.
But if we're not able to cover it all. But from she called me, said, Dennis, don't worry about it. She said, I'm going to go see the Hopi Indians. I said, what, really? Because we talked about the Hopis, and the Hopis talked about the coming of the true white brother. And according to them, the true white brother hasn't appeared yet, but the true white brother would have knowledge of the survival of the cleansing of the Earth Mother. That was part of their prophecy. And she decided even though she wasn't a brother, she was a true white person. But anyway, she was very curious about that prophecy and wanted to go down and see the Hopis. And she started hitchhiking. No money, barefoot, mystically pregnant. And, she started hitchhiking, and some guy picked her up, and he found out she didn't have any food, didn't have any money. And so he had an old flute, and he gave it to her. He says, maybe you can pawn this and get some money. And she did. She pawned this flute that he gave her when he let her out. And then after that, she got picked up by a farmer, very nice man, elderly man, and gave her a ride deep into the state that she was heading in. Took her right to the edge of the Hopi Reservation, but she was still pretty much in the boonies, and she started walking down the highway in the middle of nowhere, and these Indians came by in a pickup truck, and they had been drinking, and they're hooting and hollering at her, and then they turned around, and they came back again. Then she got paranoid, so, oh, my God, So she went off into the wilderness, and she said she hid when they came by again. they didn't see where she ran into the wilderness. And she kept walking.
Does she get to the Hopi elder soon?
Yes, and she comes to this clearing, and there's an old man with white hair. And he's staring at her, and he's smiling. And she walks up to him, and he goes, "Little Mother, your name is Little Mother." And she says, "What?" And he says, "I've been waiting for you." This is like science fiction. And he was 104 years old, Greyhawk, a Hopi Indian. And his wife had died about 40 years previous to that time. And he said he had been with his wife, I think, like 30 years, and they had a couple of children. She just died, and it almost killed him. And he was thinking very seriously of just dying, you know, just not wanting to live. And he had a very powerful dream. He said, "No, you can't do that, because you have knowledge that Little Mother needs regarding, because she's going to come to you. She's going to be with a child in the old way." And, you know, this is like a movie.
Wow.
And he died 7 days later. He knew he was going to die after.
So what did he impart to her?
He told her all kinds of stuff about what to expect, that this child was going to be very important. And
who did he think the child was going to be if it had lived?
He also knew my name, which is completely nuts. She said, "Oh..." Because she decided, what was your question?
Who did he obviously thought the child was going to be important, but we know the child died.
Yeah,
but who does he think the child was supposed to be?
There's no detail about that, just that it would be important.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think just the fact that she conceived and gave birth is very important.
Right, okay.
Because it really, it demonstrates that fact that women can do that.
Right.
And they
Sure.
Yeah. It's all over the world. It's in many indigenous cultures.
So what else, was there anything else that he told her that you think is important enough to share with listeners?
Gee, I'm trying to remember. I know she said she couldn't tell me certain things, but...
All right, so, and you're getting all of this from the letters that she's writing you, right?
And phone calls, too. Yeah.
Okay. So, all right, so he dies. She's only with him
a week. Yeah, he dies.
Then what happens?
Well, before he died, she came. She said, "Well, before I stay," because he invited her to stay, he says, "In 7 days, I'm going to die." So she said, "Well, before I stay, I need to go make a phone call." That was her connection with me. That's how strong it was, because I know my friends are going to be worrying about me. So she hitchhikes out to the, a payphone and calls me. But before she left, he said, "Oh, you're going to go call your friend Dennis?" I said, "Don't ask me. This is just too much." But she calls me and says, "Dennis, I'm going to go back. I'm going to be there at least a week, and I'll tell you what happens." And he did die, and she was at the ceremony. And I guess she got a lot of information about how to, what to expect, blah, 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 blah,
All right, so is there anything besides she leaves the reservation and goes back home then?
Yeah, she went back home and lived with her mother, and she did enter that 9-month cycle, and she was told to start eating, and she did, and it was kind of hard. She regurgitated, Even I remember when I was visiting her, and she put grapes in a blender and she put it through cheesecloth, and she even regurgitated that at one point. She couldn't even keep that, that slightest pulp.
Right.
She just was distilled water. It's just pretty amazing.
So was she under a doctor's care?
No. She really stayed away from doctors as much as possible.
And so, how was her pregnancy? Was it relatively normal, or?
Yeah, it was, and she did. Because she's so tall, and even when she ate, she said her weight never changed. It always remains 135. Even now that she eats all the time, it's still 135. She said she can't understand it either. There's so much that she can't understand.
So is there anything to report during this 9-month pregnancy, or do we jump to the birth?
Oh, there was oddball stuff. She was lying in the park on a spring day, and this little girl wandered over to her. She was just lying there in the grass, and this little girl comes over, and she was talking to her, and, you know, like a four-year-old, and she put her head on Lori's belly and was talking to, like, the baby that was in there. And she was just beginning to show, and she realized as she was beginning to show, and this was probably about 6-7 months in the pregnancy, it took that long before it started to show. Then she moved from her mother's house, and she got her own apartment, because she didn't want her mother to know she was pregnant, and, you know, and so she
did. Too many questions.
Right, she did deliver the baby on her own, you know, and, you know, that means removing the placenta and cutting the cord and, you know, cleaning up, and, oh, my God.
Was it as painful as normal, or was there
no,
anything miraculous
no,
about the birth?
It was also a very, the baby was only, it was barely 5 pounds, you know, so it wasn't premature, and it was healthy. And, you know, she loved it. It was a beautiful, sweet baby. But it did die about 4 months later. And she said, on the spiritual level, she said, this earth was just too gross. The vibration was too harsh and gross. And the baby was such a highly evolved being, it just couldn't be here because the vibration was wrong.
Wow.
I believe that's changing. All the psychics are saying, you know, everything is being stepped up. So, I mean, I really think we're going into an era where women will give birth this way. You know, not a lot, and it's not for everybody. And, you know, sex is not going to go away, and men are not going to be threatened. You know, I'm still here. I've been into this for 40 years. I love men, you know. I love my dad and my brother.
Sure, sure.
You know, I love guys.
Yeah.
I understand them. It's no
yeah, but
problem,
these,
you know?
These are to create special beings, maybe beings that we need to help us evolve as a
exactly.
species.
Exactly. It's just to bring love, just love and peace and beauty to this planet. We need it, we need it, we need it.
Well, Dennis, just a little bit more, because I don't want to rush this birth through, you know, before the baby dies. So she has a relatively normal birth.
Right.
Is she just taking care of the baby like any normal mother would? I mean, is she nursing the baby, or does the baby eat food, or what does the baby eat?
Yeah. Oh, boy, I don't know. There's a lot of details that I would like to know more of myself. But it's so difficult to get Lori to speak. You know, every time I contact her, it's like this fountain of sorrow opens up in her.
Because of the baby's death?
Yeah, and believe me, I can relate to that.
Well, now, you've said that the baby didn't survive because it, you know, it basically couldn't live on this earth in the earth vibrates. Is that pretty much what you said? The energetic vibration is just not fine enough.
It's just not fine enough. And I believe a lot has changed since, you know, that time as we approach 2012. And I really think the unveiling of this jewel of in the crown of creation in parthenogenesis is really going, once it takes hold, you can never go back. This is it. This is the antidote to what the male mothers did in the 1940s. They tapped into the atomic nature of, you know, of the universe, you know, and in a small amount of uranium, they tapped an enormous explosion of energy. That's an explosion. That's the male mothers, what they did. They opened up this can of worms.
Oh, you're talking about men.
Yep. And
men. Okay, male mothers.
The,
I was trying to wrap my mind around that.
The antidote is parthenogenesis, which is, you know, a self-perpetuating egg that creates an implosion of life and love and wisdom to this planet. That's what parthenogenesis will bring.
Jen, forgive me, but I still need to go back a little bit.
Yes.
And maybe, and look, if you don't know these answers, that's okay, but I have to ask them anyway.
Sure.
Okay, so she has the baby for 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
Is a relatively normal kind of, you know, time there, or do you don't really know for sure?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you know, like any mother and baby or anything out of the normal, out of the norm
normal.
Or what?
Everything was normal. She spoke
about it. And then just suddenly
it was like
the baby.
Crib death. You know, the baby just died in its sleep.
Dies in its sleep.
Yeah. And she never reported it, you know, so nobody knew that she even had a baby. She was living away from her mother and friends.
Right.
Living in secret, you know. Nobody
knows. So what happens to Lori after this?
Oh, boy.
You know, what is life like for Lori now?
I kept calling and writing to her, and her phone number was disconnected, and then I kept getting return to sender letters. And so there was about 3 or 4 years, or even longer, that I didn't know where she was or what happened to her. But she stayed in a different state away from her mother, and her mother never knew about it. And
so
she met a man, and she's actually, she, in the last 35 years, she lived with two different men, and she has three boys, you know, through normal conception, that she's raised on her own. And about 3 years ago, the second man left. She says, you know, Dennis, there's no way I can really live with a man. You know, I'm not fit to be, you know, a wife. You know, she's just too strong-minded and too spiritual, really. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So
her letters, all of these letters that she's written,
mm-hmm.
is there any chance you're ever going to publish these?
I gave the actual physical copies of them, I mean the originals, to Marguerite. And
okay.
I scanned them, so I have them in my computer. And, you know, I would love to forward them to you if you want to see them, her own handwriting and drawings. But it's very difficult. I told Lori about Marguerite and how she's gathering birth stories from around the world, and how very important it would be if Marguerite could talk to you. But I got no response. I just think she cannot go back, and she's never processed through therapy the pain of losing a child and how unique that pain of loss is. It's very different than losing a parent or a husband.
Well, Dennis, too, think of this. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if she goes and says to some psychiatrist what you
right.
and I have been talking about.
Well, she won't
tell
them about parthenogenesis. She would just say that, you know, I lost a child, you know.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay, I see what you're saying. She could just say
yeah.
she lost a child.
Right.
But that, but it seems like there's probably still so much more to the story, you know,
yeah.
that she wouldn't be able to be honest about without them thinking she was a
lady.
That's
true, too. That's true, too.
You know?
Yeah.
Wow, what a story. Well, you know what? Let's make sure our listeners know how they can get to your website to
yes.
read some of this. Because
yeah.
some of what you and I have talked about, I know you have written in that story. They can go back and read it themselves.
Oh, yeah. A lot more detail, and there's a lot more information. And I just
so
think
what's the website?
It's so wonderful. It's The Story of Lori.
And how are you spelling Lori?
L-A-U-R-I-E, right? L-A-U-R-I-E. The Story of Lori .blogspot.com. Got it?
Right.
That's
the Story of Lori .blogspot.com.
Yep.
Well, Dan, we're about, you know, we probably only have about 5 minutes left here.
Okay.
What do you think is important? I mean, I know you've talked about this is the jewel and the crown, and, you know, you sort of started wrapping up a few minutes ago when you said that, you know, the shift is coming.
Yeah, I really believe this is part of it. I really, really do. This is the nucleus of feminism, of life on this planet. I mean, even the physicists are saying it's the self-perpetuating universe, and 98% of the life forms on this planet are microscopic, but they all give birth that way. There's no males in the microscopic kingdoms. They're all self-perpetuating female race. You know, let's just call it that. Even the stars and the galaxies and black holes. You know, they suck in energy, but they spill it out in another dimension. That's what the physicists are saying. That there's many dimensions.
Kind of like the Big Bang.
Yeah, but this perpetual bang. It's not just one bang. It's there's probably many bangs.
So,
but anyway, also, if I would love to share this story. I would love to be a spokesperson for this information, and I would love to go on the lecture circuit. If anyone would have me, I could speak for months on this subject and never exhaust it. And you know, I don't want to be rich. I don't want to be famous. I just want to share this knowledge. I'm not an expert on it by any means. I'm not a trained scientist. You know, it found me as much as I found it, and I can't shake it. And it's just the most wonderful, magnificent obsession. I guess I hate to use that word, but
well, you know, it's even hard to understand the implications of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you can go in so many different directions with it. I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, I can't fully wrap my brain around the idea.
It's just incredible. Absolutely,
yeah.
It just goes on and on. I mean, it's there in the archaeological record, Maria Gumbutas, the language of the goddess. I'll give you a quote from her. She spent 25 years, she's an archaeologist, and she died in her 90s. She spent 25 years in Eastern Europe and in the Mideast studying the most ancient matriarchal cultures on the planet, all female effigies. And she says... the parthenogenetic goddess has been the most persistent feature in the archaeological record. And there's a book that was written inspired by the language of the goddess with a foreword by Joseph Campbell. What was I saying?
About Maria Gimbutas's quote. And then her book, The Language of the Goddess, had the foreword by Joseph Campbell.
Right. Oh, I was just going to say something. There's a book that was written based on her discoveries. It's called The Chalice and the Blade, and it really goes into patriarchy and matriarchy, and
That's Rhian Eisler's book.
Yes. To me, that's like divine manifesto. It is wonderful.
Well, I'll tell you, that book and When God Was a Woman by Merlin Stone,
those
were the two books that set me on this path.
There's another one, too, that I loved by Elizabeth Gould Davis called The First Sex.
The First Sex.
Oh,
okay.
If you could find that, that is a jewel.
Is it out of print?
I don't know. It probably. The poor thing committed suicide many years ago. I was so shocked when I heard that. But she spent 25 years gathering all the information in this book. Not 25 years, about 12 years, I think, if I get
right. Well, Dan, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming on the show and sharing Lori's story.
Sure.
I think we've got into it about as much as we can, and I'm sure it seems like we hit the high points.
Right.
I mean, the only thing better would be one day to maybe talk to Lori ourselves.
Oh, God, yes.
But you know what? She just may not be able to bring herself to do that in public.
Know.
Can you imagine the scrutiny and ridicule she would probably face?
Yeah. And I don't mind. I'll take the ridicule. You know, I'll take anything anybody throws at me. It's not going to, I don't care. You know, it's like I'm a man, but I know about this stuff, and I'm glad I'm a man. Because if I was a woman, they'd be throwing garbage at me, calling me a bitch, you know. Just another feminist bitch, and it's like, well, I'm a feminist bitch male, so take that.
Well, you know, I think we're busy trying to teach people what being a feminist really is, and it's about those of us who really just want to create a caring culture.
I know, really.
You know,
I'm an artist and a musician, you know, and I suffer because of the rotten culture that we're in.
Right. Well,
military
but like you
sport,
said,
you know.
Well, the shift is coming. We have to, you know, hold out hope. And, Dan, thank you so much for sharing the story. Thank you so much for, you know, risking to tell this story, because there is some risk involved, because there's a lot of closed-minded people out there.
Oh, I know. That's okay. You know, that's okay. We have to work with that, you know.
Okay. All right.
Feel
so
free
just...
to give anybody my email, you know, that contacts you, because, you know, I can't stop talking about this. I love sharing it. And
okay.
I just think it's so important. You know, just on a psychological level, like Marguerite says, you know, just the fact, you know, it's like parthenogenesis is like secondary to the idea that this will help empower women.
Mm-hmm.
In many levels, and that's you know, that's as long as we're bringing love and wisdom to the planet, and you know, especially to women, right?
Well, and look,
so
if the Dalai If the Dalai Lama is right, it's going to be Western women who are going to save the world.
I like that. I know I heard that.
So
I love your goddess. Your goddess is a Democrat.
Oh, that my talk.
I just love that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
But you know, it is really important that women realize the divine within, that they
mm-hmm.
become empowered, because religion has subjugated women for thousands of years, and we just cannot continue on that path.
Yeah.
I mean, for the sake of all of us, you know, for the planet, the species, everything.
It's so true. It's so true.
Well, Dan, again, thank you so much. It has been a pleasure. I will let you know if I get any feedback from the show.
Sure.
I'm sure listeners will go to the story, right there on the website where you gave the address.
Right.
And thank you. Thank you for being flexible about change in the night.
Oh, anytime.
And I'm sure we will talk again. And it's an amazing story. I don't know what to say other than, you know, thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Sure. My pleasure, really.
Okay, well, good night.
Thanks, Karen.
Bye-bye. Ah, well, listeners, what a story. What a story. Incredible. If you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss goddess, the divine feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking, and whether that great she be a deity, archetype, or ideal. We talk about here how these new values and benchmarks just might save the world, or as I prefer to say, just will save the world. And you've been listening to Dan Poitras, one of the most radical feminist men alive. And again, what a story. Thank you, Dan, for peeling back the layers of our mind, for sharing the story of Lori. And listeners, I am going to go ahead and say goodnight and just remind you that we will not have a show next Wednesday. I'm actually going to be on vacation, but I will be back May 18th with Tammy Kent, author of The Wild Feminine, discussing learning from the female body, giving boys greater access to the feminine, learning how to run feminine energy in our bodies and lives, to shift into a new paradigm and access our true creative potential. It'll be interesting to know if Tammy knows anything about parthenogenesis or has any thoughts or feelings on that. Then on the 25th, I will have Jeannie Sable on the show, and our topic is going to be GMOs, working against Mother Nature. And then Thursday, right behind that show, on the 26th, I'll have the filmmaker of the docudrama Bloodline returning to the show, Renee Barrett. He is going to update us on new revelations about the bloodline of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Some interesting stuff, always some interesting stuff. So I just want to say thank you very much for listening, and go ahead and if you would, mark that you're going to follow the show so that you never miss my great guests. And I will close out tonight letting you listen to, I think I'm going to let you listen to Flora again, Goddess of Flowers by Dan Poitras. He wrote this as a tribute to Goddess, and let's just listen to a little bit of that as the show tonight closes. Thank you again, listeners, and I'll be back with you week after next.